All right, one of the best out there, Nick Roush, Kentucky Sports Radio 11 personnel. Big week, Kentucky-Tennessee. What a rivalry. Used to be played for a barrel. Now it's exchanged for bourbon bets here. But let's get over the negativity, Nick. I want your, like, immediate reaction. Just put it, you know, they say you got to, like, visualize what's going to happen and it will come true. Mm-hmm. Nick Roush's immediate reaction when Kentucky goes up to Neyland Stadium and whoops Tennessee's ass circa 2020.
Okay. I got to build myself up a little bit here because you get the defense back in gear where Dylan Sampson is stuffed up for the first time all year. Kentucky did that at Ole Miss. Maybe they could do that again. Maybe Nico, he typically overthrows his receivers. Maybe he underthrows them and they turn into interceptions. You get a Berrien Brown return touchdown, and don't look now, but the Cats, they're breaking into the equipment manager's office. They're stealing the beer barrel, bringing it back to Lexington. I'm running all around Neyland Stadium. Might get punched in the face a time or two, and it'll be the greatest knuckle sandwich I've ever eaten in my life. That's that would be worth it. That would be worth it, but it's probably not going to happen, Mike. It's probably not going to happen.
Well, I mean, if this season has taught us anything, it's unexpected results. Like you just referenced him winning at Ole Miss. Nobody mm-hmm. had that. That was one of the best wins of the SEC season up to that point. But Arkansas beating Tennessee, Vanderbilt beating Alabama. I mean, crazy things have happened. Where I don't think this would be the biggest upset in the SEC this season.
So part of the script, the reason why you could be optimistic if that team that went down to Ole Miss showed up is because Tennessee, you're very well aware of how slow they've started. Is it 3-point deficits, 3-0 in the last three SEC games? They've started slow. But the part that's just really hard to get over for me, I mean, Kentucky still hadn't scored more than 2 offensive touchdowns in an SEC football game, you know? And they're going up against a defense that, I mean, this is Heupel's a unit's good. And we saw what South Carolina's front did to Kentucky. It turns out that's just what they do. They did it to Oklahoma too. They raise hell. And Tennessee's is right up there with South Carolina. And I really worry about how disruptive they can be. You know, we're recording this before the injury report is out. Maybe they get Demi Sumo-Karembe back and he's able to give him something. But the way that front can really get after you, it's hard to see a scenario where Kentucky's able to capitalize on a Tennessee slow start and score some points unless some crazy shit starts to happen, Mike, and pardon my French, but it's got to be crazy for me to have a good time because I want to read a stat that my friend Adam Luckett pulled on 11 personnel. Tennessee is 20-0 outright and 14-6 ATS as a home favorite under Heupel. They are 25-7 against the spread against Kentucky over the last three decades. And Heupel is 3-0 ATS against the Cats. Mark Stoops, 1-9-1 against the Vols. I mean, it's not just the matchup. Mike, you know how it is. It's this logo. Like, Kentucky, that T, it's that ugly orange T, that stupid song. It just, it has a way of turning the Kentucky football, even if they were never Cinderella, they turn into a pumpkin. They perform poorly against the Vols no matter what. It was like that for a long time in that Florida series. Stoops was able to get that one right, but for a couple years there, even when Tennessee was down, they couldn't. I mean, he got one over Jeremy Pruitt, but the game that hurts me the most personally back in 2018, you just lost a close game to A&M. You still have a potential Sugar Bowl. You go to Tennessee and you give up a Hail Mary right before half. You lay a dud, and the worst Tennessee team in 10 years beats the best Kentucky team of my lifetime. That there's a couple of these games that really, like, gut you as a Kentucky fan, and that one's the biggest instance in which Lucy pulled the ball out from Charlie Brown.
Mm. Yeah, you sound like Cousin Shane talking about the Florida series. But
I mean,
that's kind of what it's has been.
Yeah. It's not so different. It's not so different. The only difference is Shane is he gets to drink a bunch of free bourbon to get through it from us Kentucky fans.
What is the identity of Kentucky? Because I can't figure it out. It used to be hard-nosed running. They haven't been able to do that effectively the last couple of years. Even this year it was very good defense. Now that is seemingly nowhere to be found. What do they even have an identity?
And that's why this month of October is so gutting, because you thought they did find one at Ole Miss. The offense wasn't completely there, but you finally got a couple of explosives, because the running game hasn't been great. They expected more with Ohio State running back transfer Chip Traynham. He's been hurt basically the entire year. He's only played one game. So he was going to be the bell cow, and they just haven't had him. But they still somehow ranked top 10 in success rate rushing the ball. They're efficient, getting 5, 6, 7, 8 yards here. But I think they're the only team that doesn't have a 30-yard run in the Power 5 conference this year. I mean, just finding chunk plays, finding explosive plays is nowhere to be found. And I think the offense's struggles have weighed on the defense. Some of it's injuries. But, I mean, it used to be that nobody could run on this Kentucky team. And then a true freshman at Florida, Jaden Ball, gets 5 rushing touchdowns. And then last week, Auburn only had 38 yards in that first quarter, and then they finished with 460. They leaned on him until Jarquez Hunter had 278. I think they've just been demoralized, and that's the part that, you know, I'm at least wise enough to have some perspective, Mike, but eventually things were going, like the bottom was going to fall out at some point, and you came into this 3-game stretch saying, you know what, if they go 2-1 here, you can have a good year. And instead they went 0-3. And it does feel like they are bottoming out, because like when your best unit isn't just fitting the run and doing the basics, that's when you're like, okay, well this just might be all she wrote.
Mm-hmm. What's I know you've kind of dug into the numbers here, as you always do, but you highlighted it on your timeline, is why I'm asking you. But what's the most depressing thing about this matchup, Tennessee and Kentucky, this season?
It's a good website I like to use. It's called Game on Paper, and they compare your advanced stats and they put them in clean charts right next to each other. So it's offense versus defense, and you know, I know the numbers a little bit, but we're not math guys, right? We're not out here charts and all that stuff. So it color codes it. It makes it easy for me to know if it's good or bad. And EPA expected points added. Kentucky offense, very bad at it. Tennessee defense, very good at it. The Tennessee defense versus Kentucky offense, it's like one of the great mismatches you'll see all season long. Because Kentucky hasn't scored more than 2 touchdowns in a game. And those are against the quote-unquote bad teams. This Tennessee defense, they are stout. And you give their front 7 a lot of credit, but the back half's pretty good too. And do you really trust whichever quarterback Kentucky's going to throw out there to not throw an interception or two? It's gut-wrenching to think about what the Vols defense might do to Kentucky. Because even when the Kentucky offense struggled a couple of years ago, you still had Will Levis, and you put together a decent early, you know, after the 3-and-out, you did have something good going there. And then that hornet's nest, man, it was buzzing, and they just stung over and over again. I think that's the other part that's it's known. So I don't think you're going to hear a lot of people handicapping it, but at stadium, for as much as I hate it, it's going to be packed, it's going to be loud, and they are going to be fired up for this blackout football game. Even though they know they should kill Kentucky, I think they're just licking their chops at the chance to feast.
Mm-hmm. Why is Kentucky so bad on offense? They went out, they spent money, they got a quarterback, you referenced it, they got a running back, new offensive coordinator, there was some hope there. Why has it gotten this bad?
Some of it is just like systemic long-term issues where, you know, they basically almost missed on 3 years of high school offensive line recruiting. John Schwarman passed away, and then they had a bunch of coaching changes. And the lesson I've learned, Mike, is trying to fill gaps on your line via the portal, it's not going to work. It's just not. Look at Oklahoma this year, right? I mean, they're rolling players in and out trying to find something, and it's hard to do. So that's been a big issue. I think Brock Vandegrift, he's been just good enough to frustrate you because feels like he's a half beat slow some of the time. And when he's on it, they're good. And then you go to some of the receivers and some of the, like Dane Key has been really good. He's been their best offensive player. But then in the Vanderbilt game, he made two mistakes that cost you points. One was a 15-yard penalty that kicked him out of field goal range, unsportsmanlike conduct, and he had a penalty in scoring territory that would have got you down in the red zone, or he just fumbles the football, you know? So their best players haven't been their best, and their run game just hasn't been explosive enough. They found ways to get by without Chip training, but they can't generate explosives, so you got to be able to execute in the red zone. Well, they're 100th in red zone touchdown scoring percentage. It's like, well, maybe if you get in the red zone, you punch it in. Well, if you struggle to punch it in, maybe you just get explosives. They just can't. They can't do either. And it's been painful to watch. And I know for a lot of weary Kentucky fans out there, Mike, that have watched Mark Stoops football for a dozen years, a lot of them are real grateful for all the success. But there's also a lot of them who are sick and tired of watching bad offense after bad offense. It's nothing new around these parts, and folks are getting fed up with it.
Yeah, and that's where I was going to go next. So, obviously, I mean, is this – I know he's had personal tragedy, so I'm not trying to pile on the guy here, but is this the beginning of the end, you think? Or, I mean, I know he's got a $44 million buyout, so I wouldn't imagine Kentucky's going to fire him, but, you know, I think he can sense, and certainly I would think – and you just referenced the fans. I mean, that there's a sense that change is needed, perhaps for all involved.
There's just a lot of signs there, and you're right. Like, Kentucky's not paying $44 million for Mark Stoops to go away. I don't think Mitch Barnhart would pay him $1 to go away. Now, maybe they come to some sort of settlement, but like firing Mark Stoops after one bad year, and that comes on the heels of eight. Like, he's earned enough cachet to where Kentucky's not going to fire him, right? But to your point, I mean, going into this season, it kind of felt like there was just a lot of stuff out there. First, you had all the stuff with Texas A&M happen last year, right? Like, that was a clear enough sign. It's not, but, you know, you could say, well, he's done this before. It happens. But then there was an article that came out around SEC Media Days. I think the interview happened during spring meetings where he was talking about how isolated he felt with NIL fundraising, and there was a lot of frustrations with the job at Kentucky. His brother didn't coach for very long. His dad passed away on a football field while coaching. You would think that early retirement could maybe be in store for him. And then on top of it all, you know, I mean, his kid's going to be playing college football probably at the D2 level next year. So, like, he might want to go see them. I think there was a couple moments where he was in the past where he thought, well, if we have a good year, we're on our way out. This year, I think, was another chance for that, where they had a very senior-led or veteran-led roster, a lot of experienced guys on the defense, and a big rebuild lies ahead. I'm not sure he's going to want to take on that workload, knowing that it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. So, and all the while, if he does step away, he could hand the program to one of his former assistants who's done an outstanding job and is a former player. And so you could still have that connection to the program, and you'd hand it off to a guy to where all of the work you did to get to this point probably isn't going to be all wasted because they made a bad hire right after that, where things came crumbling down. So it kind of feels like there will be a change, but that's digging into Mark Stoops' head. It's ultimately all going to be up to him at the end of this season. But we still got four more games to play, and who the hell knows? I mean, what if they did? Like, how crazy would it be if they did just beat Tennessee or Texas on the road? Like, you only beat the top 10 teams, but you lose to Vanderbilt, South Carolina, and a previously winless Auburn team at home. You know, like,
And is it possible, because I've heard you reference this as well, and shout out to you, you're the only one I know that calls it NIL. Everyone else calls it NIL. But is it possible that he is not suited well for this NIL era? With you know, it's always been draft and develop. And I don't know, that may be a lot tougher to do in this modern era.
I am of the belief. So like when people will say things have changed since we got NIL, we got NIL in here, you know, and the response is typically, well, that's not an excuse. Everybody's dealing with it. I don't think it's an excuse. I just don't think Mark Stoops is as good of a coach in the NIL era because his recruit and develop mantra was all based on having guys get within the program and be there for a few years. And yes, they had some success with a few transfers, but it was just a few. You know, it wasn't like what you kind of have to do now where it's 15 to 20 guys a year. It was like 7 to 10 tops. And so I think he's kind of a hands-off guy. He wants it to be a player-led program. It's harder to be a player-led program when you don't have 3 and 4 year high school guys who can make the transfers assimilate to your culture. And so in recent years, the best players haven't been the 3 and 4 year culture guys. And that's made it a tougher job for him. Or I don't think he handles it as well as he used to. He's just not as good of a coach as he was before the NIL era. And you know what? The job changed. He's tried to change with it. And I just don't think he's as good.
Mm-hmm. All right, last thing for you, Nick. Really appreciate your time. But after these games, you guys, the fine folks at KSR, you do a live reaction outside the stadium. Do you get more Kentucky fans watching that, or do you get more Tennessee fans?
Oh, man. I got to say, we just started doing those a year ago, and the Tennessee fans really helped it take off. So, thank you. I tip my cap to you guys. You all... You really helped us out a bunch there. The thing is, I was mad last year. It'll probably just be sad. And you know what, Tennessee fans, if you want to drink my tears, drink away. Just drink away. I appreciate all of your clicks and your engagement. And you know what, I enjoy some of the back and forth, right? Louisville fans, they're dead in the water. They don't even have a pulse. At least Tennessee fans, they can punch back and forth, and it's a lot of fun. It would be more fun if Kentucky would land a haymaker every once in a while, but instead, I've just got to eat it, and I fear I'm going to have to be eating more of that crow on Saturday at Neyland Stadium.
Mm-hmm. So can you let not just the Tennessee fans, but all the SEC fans, let them know how to follow you and how to find all your work, including those epic post-game meltdowns?
Those are on the Kentucky Sports Radio YouTube channel. So go ahead and subscribe like you subscribe to that SEC podcast, and you'll get notifications whenever we go live post-game. I'm also KentuckySportsRadio.com and Roush, R-O-U-S-H-K-S-R on Twitter. But appreciate you having me on, Mike. You know what? I don't care what they say about you. You're the best Tennessee fan I know.
Well, that's not saying much, but I do appreciate it.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.